Views and opinions expressed on this program are those of the guests and contributors, and not necessarily those of WFSU Public Media.
What's the 411? You're tuned in to 411 Teen, a weekly program for teens, families, educators, and other interested folks. 411 Teen provides a forum to examine and discuss various issues and events that we dive into, and we look at the shape, the challenge, and sometimes the disruption they may cause in our lives. I'm Dr. Liz Hollifield. September is National Service Dog Month, a time to honor the incredible animals who help individuals with disabilities live more independent, empowered lives. Service dogs are highly trained working partners who perform specific tasks, from guiding people who are blind to alerting individuals with seizures to supporting veterans with PTSD. But what makes a service dog different from an emotional support dog or a therapy dog? Laura Lee Putzbeck, CEO of Service Dogs Alliance of Florida, talks with 411 Teen via the Zoom platform. Laura Lee, we are glad to have you. She brings a blend of professional expertise and lived experience to her mission, empowering service dog teams and educating businesses, government agencies, and community organizations. Laura Lee serves as Executive Director of Service Dog Alliance, Incorporated, an all-volunteer nonprofit organization dedicated to promoting access through education. She is also a co-facilitator of Florida ADA Coordinators Network, a certified ADA coordinator, and a member of the National ADA Network's Train the Leader TLN program. That's a mouthful, Laura Lee, and I am really glad to have you.
Appreciate the opportunity to talk about my favorite subject.
Oh, yes, and I appreciate you being here. My first question to you is, how does ADA, Americans with Disabilities Act, define a service dog?
They've made it really simple. It's a dog that is individually trained to do work or perform tasks for a person with a disability.
Okay, that makes it real simple. And I guess it would be a disability that is identified by ADA. You know, it's not one that people just come up with and say, well, I need this dog, you know.
So you're right. It's important to talk about functional needs. Mm-hmm. So it's not about my medical diagnosis, because not all medical conditions rise to the level of a disability. It has to substantially impair a major life activity. So, for example, with movement, if my balance is bad or I fall, that is the disability-related need, not the fact that I may have diabetes that gives me foot neuropathy or cancer that makes me weak. It's the actual limitation in my life.
Okay. So what I'm hearing then is, well, I'd like to have you share the types of tasks service dogs can perform. And if I base it on what you said, then it would be something with mobility and I guess maybe psychiatric. I know they do medical alerts. So what types of disabilities might benefit from a service dog? I know autism support is in there. Is that correct? Guide walk. I mean,
It's not about the disability. It's about what the medical condition is impairing you not to be able to do a function. So let's talk about sensory. The first service dog we think of is a guide dog. Mm-hmm. And that's trained to help with navigation. Okay. A hearing dog helps with people who may need to know people are approaching from behind. I may not have total hearing loss, but I may be someone with impaired hearing. I may have what they call POTS, which is postural orthostatic tachycardia syndrome. That means when my blood pressure gets out of whack, I pass out, and that dog may be trained to do a number of different things. It may be able to alert to that in advance so I can get to a place where I'm safe. It may sit on me So I don't get up when my blood pressure is still not at a place where I should be standing. So the dog is trained specifically to what my need is.
So I have seen them turn lights on.
You've seen them turn lights on. You've seen them open doors with their nose for the handicapped button at a mall. You can have a door with a door tug where they pull the door or the drawer open. I've worked with someone who was a paraplegic, and there was a device that got attached to the sock, and they helped the person put their socks on. So it really, there is no one job. It depends on the person's needs and the dog's capabilities.
Okay. Now, will you make a distinction between service dogs and psychiatric service dogs and ESA? I mean, because I, you know, they're all different types, and I think it would be very helpful if you would make that distinction for our listening audience.
The easiest thing to do is to break it into three categories, and I'm going to give you the difference.
Okay.
I would take psychiatric service dog and take that out of your vocabulary.
Okay.
A service dog is a service dog is a service dog, no matter what its job is. Okay. Then there is an emotional support animal. The difference is, the emotional support animal is not trained to do the specific work or task to mitigate my disability. They're primarily to calm me, keep me comfortable, which is not a task. It's a feeling. So that's the difference between those two. And a therapy dog is the benefit for someone else. So I may go to the nursing home with my dog to visit patients. So it's for the benefit of others, or the library to read with children. And we get confused because service dogs are the only ones that are allowed in most places. Otherwise, I'm invited in.
Okay. All right. That really clears it up. Because I have seen dogs that didn't seem like they were doing anything. And they were not controlled. And that I've had people say, this is my whatever kind, service dog, emotionally support dog. And, you know, you walk into the room and then the dog follows you out and plays with you. Is that not?
So you packed a lot in there. So so let's talk about the responsibility of the handler. So in order for it to be a service dog, it's trained for me specifically, and it must do a work or task to mitigate my disability. And businesses can ask what that job is, and you're required as a handler to tell them. So a dog's can't be fake. We don't use that word, but a handler can misrepresent. They have a disability, or the dog's been trained, and then dogs are dogs. So whether it is a service dog or not, is it under the handler's control? And so there are expected behaviors when you're a handler to keep your dog under control when you're out in public, and businesses have a right to ask you to leave if you're not able to get your dog under control.
All right. Well, what's involved in it? How does one match a dog with the handler? I mean, does the size matter? Does the temperament matter? What is involved with that?
Well, we encourage people who call us, because we get a lot of inquiries, I want a dog. And we say the first thing is you have to ask yourself some five basic questions. First, do you have a disability? And we've talked about that. Mm-hmm. Second, will a dog make my disability worse? For some people, especially with mental health conditions, the mere fact of having to talk to another human being is so debilitating that if they know they have to get asked about their dog, they may not want to even start with a dog. So it's really important to understand about your disability and what your needs are. In the mobility arena, absolutely. There is a weight-height ratio so that both you and the dog are safe, because some jobs in the mobility arena, like bracing to get up from a chair, counterbalance so that you don't tilt, require for your safety that level of specificity for the match. And not all dogs are the right size. Mm-hmm. And then there's the whole temperament. For example, my first service dog was being trained for my low vision. Right job to get him on the bus. He was more suited for mobility work because of his love of people and attention to fine deal wasn't fine detail wasn't his skill set. So he was matched with a youngster in middle school that had a heart condition in a wheelchair where he could be goofy in himself and still do his job. So it is really just like picking a partner, whether it's a husband, a boyfriend, a study partner, finding the right match.
Okay. Well, what does the whole training journey look like for a service dog from puppyhood to placement?
That will depend on who the trainer is. The ADA says there is no definition of who can train the dog. So I may get my dog from a program, from a dog trainer, or train it myself. So I may be working with a for-profit or nonprofit company or individual, or doing it myself. The standard is the same. You want basic obedience so that the dog is always listening to you. You want to be able to have a dog who in public understands its job of not distracting the public. And it's trained for your specific job that you need for your health.
And then I think I can answer my question, but I'm going to pose it anyway. So how long does it usually take to fully train a service dog?
It goes back to the dog. And the reason I say that, mobility dogs have to have their growth plates fully closed before you can do some of those activities that are needed. So that's usually around 2 years when growth plates close. And then there's the maturity of the dog. So a silly dog temperament may take longer, but basically you're going to be through puppyhood, and usually 12 to 24 months is about when you see a skilled, fully functioning service dog.
Well, next question, I guess you know, is how much does it cost? How much does a training cost, and who typically pays for this training?
Depending on where you get the dog, it can cost anywhere up to $50,000. What's going to play into that is the provider you choose. The cost of the dog is a big cost, just the actual purchase of the dog, and then the training.
Okay. All right. Well, let's take a break. Are you still with me?
Yeah.
Okay. Yes. All right. We're going to take a brief break. And you are sharing just invaluable information. It's a real education for me. I certainly know the difference. I appreciate you. We're going to take a break. You're tuned in to 411 Team. We'll get right back at you. Just tuning in, the program is 411 Team, and September is National Service Dog Month. We are honored to have Laura Lee Putzback, CEO of Service Dog Alliances of Florida. Laura Lee, we were just talking about the training of a service dog. What happens to those dogs who don't make it? I mean, they just didn't accomplish what you wanted them to do.
Well, some dogs end up getting repurposed, meaning the job that they were originally assigned to, they meet all the criteria for being a dog that's well under control, but they may not make a good seeing eye dog, but they make a good mobility dog.
Okay.
So they may get retooled. It might be not a good match with the person, that the lifestyle and the temperament of the dog may be too high energy, and they need a different handler. And then there are those dogs that just aren't suited for the work. Sometimes we see them repurposed and they go to work with police as bomb sniffing dogs because their obedience is good and they just have a different job. Sometimes a program will actually, in the blind community, they will allow someone that is not disabled to purchase them, but they'll never work as a service dog and you'll get a great pet.
I see. Okay. So I guess the success rate is really high because if they don't fit in one niche, they'll fit in another.
I wish we could say that. a lot of service dogs wash out. It's kind of like going to medical school. Not everybody can cut it in medical school.
Okay. Well, are there particular breeds that are preferred over others? I know I've seen, I tend to see, and it might just be me, seems like a lot of poodles are used.
I actually have a service dog poodle. I always tease, once you go poodle, you never go back. But labs are a common, especially in the visually impaired community. We see a high number of German Shepherds. So it depends. Programs typically will have a specific breed because they're actually raising and birthing babies into service work, so they're sticking with one kind of dog. Dog trainers and people who train their own dog can pick any type of dog, from Chihuahua to Great Dane.
Okay. All right. Well, let's take a break for a minute and look at the Service Dog Alliance. What do they do? Share that with the listening audience.
The Service Dog Alliance is an all-volunteer nonprofit. Our goal is access through education. Whether you need help deciding to use a service dog, whether you need help finding somewhere place to get a service dog, or you've had an access issue in employment, housing, or the community, we're going to help you learn to self-advocate so that you can have access to your community.
Okay. How do volunteers and community members support your organization? Is there a place for them?
There is. Our biggest place right now is getting the community to participate in our public awareness campaign. We have rolled it out for businesses, churches, state and local governments. If you have a place open to the public, we have door decals. We have information cards that help people understand service animals are welcome and what the rights and responsibilities of both the business and the service dog handler are.
Okay. Share, if you don't mind, the contact information for your nonprofit organization. And individuals may be listening and want to participate, want to volunteer, community members, those who are into dogs and loving dogs, you know, may like to volunteer.
You can go to the web at servicedogafl.com. You can call us at 352-410-6500. Or you can find us on Facebook.
Okay. Briefly describe the daily life for someone partnered with a service dog. I mean, how important is the handler-dog relationship and bonding and the teamwork? Just give us a feel, please.
So I've had a service dog for 15 years. The experience will be different for everyone, mm-hmm. but there are some common things. It's my partner and my lifeline, so I have to have its back. If I am not making sure my dog's needs are met, and we're talking beyond food and medical mm-hmm. care, I have to make sure he's happy, which means playtime just like any other dog, which means exercise like any other dog. Okay. The second thing is I have to recognize that it's a dog. And so he's going to have bad days just like I do. And I'm going to be able to have his back when he experiences something he's never experienced before. I need to be his support as much as he needs to do his job for me when I need him. So it takes a lot of work. It's not a pet. And I think that's the hardest thing for people to understand, because it's a lot of work. It's not just I get to take my dog everywhere.
Well, and talking about taking your dog, where are service dogs legally allowed to go with their handlers?
In the United States, under the ADA, almost anywhere I go, my dog can go with me. There are a few exceptions. I'm not going to take my dog because of health and safety issues into the surgical unit.
Okay.
For health code, he's not getting in the pool with me. There are some examples of, like, at national parks where wildlife, and it's considered a fundamental alteration that the presence of my dog disrupts that ecosystem. There are times or areas where my dog might not be allowed to go. But usually businesses are pretty good at identifying in advance if there's an exclusion area. And those are very few and far between.
So you're saying that they can go to restaurants, they can go to schools, I guess they could go on public transportation. I mean, do I have the right mindset?
Pretty much. You're going to go think about state and local government. I can go to the county commission meeting. I can go to on the bus that the public transport runs. I can go in a taxi cab. I can go to the grocery store. I can go to the gym. I can go to the beach.
Okay. I got you. Well, my next question is, share with us, and I know there's a lot of them, and I think it would be really helpful to the listening audience, some of the misconceptions about service dogs. Because we all got it wrong, except for, you know, you and those who have it. I don't think we know anything, you know, much about service dogs. I think we think, oh, they can go any place they want, you know. And every dog that has a vest on is a service dog, and that's not true either. But so share some of the common misconceptions about service dogs.
The more we see service dogs out, the more we experience what I call service dog fatigue. And that's not a real service dog.
Mm-hmm.
First of all disabilities are not visible. So you may not know what the person's disability is, just like that's when right. They park in the handicapped parking. You don't know what their disability is. Second, a dog does not have to wear a vest or identifier. It can go naked, not the handler, just the dog. And the gear does not make a service dog. It's the dog's behavior and its ability to do its job. You may see dogs that are off leash. That is an exception to the ADA. You're required to follow local ordinances about vaccinations and registration. And I have to follow the law just because I have a disability, unless I need a modification because I can't use the leash. I need to follow the rules. I think the other thing is that a fear of dogs that rises to the level of disability or an allergy means I can be kept out. Not true. You have to accommodate everybody's disability.
Mm-hmm. Okay. That helps. That helps a lot. What about when one has to go to the doctor? Can they take their service dog with them?
The answer is yes. Here's what I advise handlers, and I consider myself a pretty experienced handler. And I'm single, and I go to my appointments alone. I'm independent. But there will be times where, even as an experienced handler, I did not anticipate what service I was going to have at my doctor's office. So when I went to the podiatrist, or a problem, I didn't expect that I was going to be having an x-ray during my appointment at a small podiatry office. And so my dog, there was no one to hold him, and that's not the business's responsibility. So you need to think about, especially in healthcare,
okay,
an inpatient, who's going to care for my dog? Because that's not the job of the business or the hospital.
Okay. So you would need to take someone with you?
You might. It might be that you coordinate in advance, what services am I going to have, so mm-hmm. that you can plan for that. If I'm staying overnight in the hospital and I haven't made sure that the doctor will write orders that I can go off the floor and take my dog out to potty, if my dog hasn't been trained to use a potty pad, yes, I'm going to need to make other arrangements. So there is a big responsibility as a handler to plan in advance for things that are going to happen so that you make sure that someone's there to help you.
Okay. Is a dog in a vest a service dog?
No. A service dog is not identified by what it wears.
Okay.
It is identified by the job it does and its behavior. Anybody can buy equipment off the internet. Anybody can make equipment. We always say, mm-hmm. don't get distracted. It might be a tie-dye dog. It might be a dog wearing shoes. It might be a dog marked clearly, do not pet, service dog. None of that matters. What matters is its job and its behavior.
Okay. Now, does that apply to air travel? Because I remember reading that, what was it, ESA dogs are not, I may have incorrect, but are not eligible for special accommodations in air travel. Is that correct?
That is correct. In 2021, they changed the law. So emotional support animals, those animals that provide comfort and support but aren't trained specific jobs, can travel as pets as long as they meet the pet criteria. The only animal that flies would be a service dog, and there are forms you must submit with your travel to do that.
Now, do the rules and requirements, are they at the federal level, excuse me, or are they at the state level? I mean, does it vary from state to state? So, I mean, you're here in Florida and you go to Virginia. Are there different rules that you have to accommodate?
Yes and no.
So the
federal laws are in all 50 states, and that's mm-hmm. what we've predominantly been talking about today. The ADA covers public accommodations. It covers housing. But fair housing is a little different. So the rules over there, while similar, they're a different set of laws. The Air Carrier Act is separate from the ADA, but they follow the ADA. And then the employment laws, service dogs aren't even mentioned. It's just an accommodation, operates a little differently. But when you get past the federal level, 48 states have their own laws. They can't change the federal rights and responsibilities, but they've added to them. Okay. So for example, in Florida, we have statute 41308, and they have extended services recognition to service dogs in training. That means an 8-week-old puppy, for example, that has a handler from Guiding Eyes for the Blind that's helping raise it, has mm-hmm. the same rights and responsibilities to go out in public with it as I do with my service dog who's almost 8, but the expectation is the behavior will be the same.
Okay.
The other part of the law that you'll find in other states and in Florida is a fraud law, so it's a crime to misrepresent it's a service animal. It's a crime to interfere with the working dog. Or injure or kill it. And so there are additional protections for the service dog and its handler.
Okay. I remember reading about facility dogs. Would you elaborate on, I think it was identified as a growing category of therapy dogs. Can you elaborate on the facility dog, expound on that, and just tell us what that means?
Sure. So there's a difference between a service dog, a therapy dog, and a facility dog. The service dog is trained specifically for me, the individual with a disability, to mitigate my disability. A therapy dog is a dog anyone could own. So you could own the dog and take it into places where you're invited for the benefit of others, the library to read to mm-hmm. kids, the nursing home. The facility dog is a dog typically owned, managed by that organization for the benefit of their work. So the hospital at Tampa General has a facility dog program. Court services may have a court services dog to help children who are traumatized. And the dog is doing the work of providing support and comfort and distraction in that facility. It might be a dog that is at a physical therapy office that is encouragement to have someone walk. So it's not that person's dog, but it's an incentive and it's operated and managed by that business.
Okay. Let's say I want a service dog. Where do I go to find them? Do I contact your organization? Would that be helpful? But I want one. What do I do?
So once you've done your self-assessment of what you need, because you need to understand what you're looking for, because remember we talked about programs out there. Some mm-hmm. programs only offer one kind of dog. So if I have multiple disabilities, they may not be able to help me. So understanding if I want a fully trained dog or I want to train a dog myself is the first step. And then identifying the resources. The waiting lists are long, so we encourage people to ask up front before applying, is there an application fee? How long do I need to wait?
Mm-hmm.
Are there conditions of getting the dog? You know, do I have to be animal free in my home? Do I have to have a fence? Do I own the dog or does the organization own it and can take it back? So there's a lot of homework to finding the right match. If you're going to train your own dog, you want to make sure you have help in testing the temperament because not every dog is going to make it.
Well, let me interrupt you there and ask you to hold your thoughts, and we will come back to talk the temperament because I was just thinking about that. You're tuned in to 411 Teen, where we explore issues, concepts, and ideas. We're going to take a brief break. It's time for Reflections with Raphael, a commentary from Raphael Hollyfield Wimmer, an honor student and gifted musician at the esteemed Girard Academic Music Program in Philadelphia, where he blends intellect with creativity. Whether he's striking keys, sounding drums, or sharing ideas, Raphael brings insight with rhythm, thought with heart, and a fresh perspective you won't want to miss. Reminding us that wisdom isn't just a matter of age, it's a matter of vision.
Hey y'all, I am Raphael and you are listening to Raphael's Reflection. Today I will be sharing my opinion on the importance of companionship to feel better and more at peace, particularly that animal friends or pet companions can be just as, if not more important than human companionship. I'll be sharing some examples of how and why this is important. I believe that everybody not only deserves to have a companion that they can rely on in their life, but they need it. I feel that as humans, we are not solitary beings, and we need to have other people in our life, like our loved ones, or for a lot of people, we just need a pet. The bond formed between pets and their owners is something truly special and unparalleled, especially for people who are more introverted, shy, or just find it challenging to be social with other people. Now, personally, I am a very extroverted person. I have a lot of friends and I like being around other people in general, but I still have days when everybody is making me mad and I need space away from everyone. And when I have those days, I often find that the only thing that doesn't annoy me is petting or walking or just spending time with my dog. I mean, for people in general, many of us are used to living in a household with somebody else or several other people who you can socialize with and talk to, which is healthy because you let your emotions out instead of keeping them bottled up. I would even say that having other people in your life provides an outlet of sorts. However, like I said, not all people get along with other people. Even people who are likable can still get on your nerves at times. Even the nicest person can be in a bad mood, so you never know what you're going to get when you deal with people. But dogs consistently love you. Having a pet like a dog or even a cat can replace human companionship, which is helpful when you or the people around you are in a bad mood. But that's not it. Having a companion also means feeling and expressing love, which can be reciprocated back to you in an endless cycle that only helps to boost morale and good feelings in the house. Although animals cannot talk, they still have their own ways of expressing their love. When we make sure that our pets are fed, healthy, fit, and receive love and affection, we get shown love and affection in return, like when the pet checks on you or sits with you on the couch. In short, what I'm saying is that while having human companionship is very important and helpful, I think it is absolutely fascinating that for many people, having a pet can nearly fully replace the joy that we get from being around other people. And oftentimes, it's more consistent. Thanks for listening. I hope you enjoyed my reflection.
Views and opinions expressed on this program are those of the guests and contributors, and not necessarily those of WFSU Public Media.
What's the 411? You're tuned in to 411 Teen. I'm Dr. Liz Holyfield, and this edition of 411 Teen is talking with Laura Lee Putzbeck, Service Dog Alliance of Florida. Right before break, we were just getting ready to talk about temperament. So, Laura Lee, will you take it on with the temperament of the dog and what is required?
So, in the dog world, there's something called prey drive. So prey means if I see a squirrel, am I going to run and get it full-fledged and I don't care what happens around me? So we want something in the middle of the road because we want to be motivated by food or toys. So in our training, we're going to be successful. So prey drive goes into how much attention and participation I will have as a service dog. The other thing is fear. You want to look at someone who's not overly social, but not overly afraid. So we're looking for the dog that's in the middle of all of the tests. We're looking for a biddable dog, a dog that likes to work for the person and gets pleasure out of that. There are some dogs that just want to go off in the corner and be left alone all day. And that's really hard when you're picking a puppy out at 8 weeks old. And so that's why we always encourage, if even though you've had dogs all your life, a working dog, it's really important because picking at that 8-week-old point of what that dog's personality is going to be like when it's full grown is really a hard job.
Okay. And I think we've alluded to this, but what are some of the challenges that handlers face in public?
The first thing I want to prepare you for, it's like packing your baby to go, because you need to have water. You need to have supplies for waste management.
Okay.
You need to maybe have boots because the asphalt is hot. So when I try, you know, I'm going to the trip to the grocery store in the middle of a hot Florida day, mm-hmm. I still have to pack for my partner. And then if I'm going for a gallon of milk, and now that they've moved it to the back of most stores, I have to be prepared for a zillion people stopping me on my way to get my gallon of milk. Mm-hmm. As the general public, what kind of dog? What's your dog's name?
yeah.
You know, the things that we don't do with a wheelchair or a walker. So,
right.
That's an issue. Barriers to access are a really big problem. Because as I talked about service dog fatigue, some businesses are like, no, I don't care. It's the law. Don't come in. Sometimes it's staff aren't trained. Sometimes it's our attitude is there's nothing we can do about it. We're letting all dogs in, and the behavior of other dogs threatens the health and well-being of my dog. And, you know, we've been attacked in public.
Oh, really?
Yeah. So, and again, even the most well-behaved service animals are going to be protective if another dog is coming out.
Of course, they should. I would think so. Yeah. Okay. How do you address and how do you handle those businesses or organizations that don't comply with the federal law?
That's how our organization was born. We were a group of disabled handlers that were having access issues in housing and employment and going to places like stores and gyms. And so access through education is the motto, because sometimes it's just breaking down myths. We recently did a training for a local restaurant who thought the rule was four on the floor. She was a dog lover and she's like, well, no, they just have to stay on the floor. there's people are making up rules. That's not a rule. And so what we're trying to do is help businesses learn what the rights and responsibilities of the handler and the business are, so that all customers, whether they have a service dog or not, are safe when service animals are present.
Okay. How do you handle this? And it seems to be an epidemic, I'm calling it that, where you have these fake service dogs. Because the more I talk to you, the more I think about how I have encountered, you know, just in my everyday maneuverings, really fake, what I would call fake service dogs.
So the first thing we want the audience to do is stop using the word fake. It's going to be misrepresent.
Okay, misrepresent.
That carries weight because it's a crime to misrepresent.
Okay.
If a person can misrepresent in two ways, that they have a disability. So we're never going to know that unless they go to court, because that information is protected.
Okay.
They just have to answer, is it a service dog required of your disability? The second is, the dog has been trained to mitigate the disability. And if the person can't answer those questions that are being asked of them that are allowed, then you don't have to let them in. Mm. The third way is the dog under control? Because we do not have to tolerate dogs who are sniffing, lunging, barking, biting. Those dogs don't have to stay in the business. You can ask the handler to get the dog under control, or they're required to remove the dog, and then you serve them without the dog.
Okay. All right. That clarifies. I still have more questions, but I want to get with you. What have I not covered that you think is necessary and that you as CEO would like to emphasize and make sure that the listening audience has been exposed to?
I think the most important thing is we're all in this together. Responsible service dog management, meaning I as a handler am responsible for making sure my dog does not disrupt anybody else that's out in public or in my housing environment. That businesses have the responsibility and are obligated under the law to let them in. And that if customers don't like that, it's not the business's fault. And if the businesses can manage the behavior of those animals are present, everybody wins.
Okay. And that's all? You don't have anything else to add? I must have done a good job.
We didn't talk about schools, and I know that your program is geared towards kids. And so there's college. And the rules are a little different because usually at college, when people go away to college, they're living in dorms. At college, they will have the requirements of the ADA and sometimes fair housing because they're living on campus.
Okay.
At college, your best resources is your disability support services agency. Sometimes your IEP from school is not transferring to college, so you're really starting over with your service animal. And then in K through 12 schools, every community that we have worked with, and we're finding the rules are different.
Oh.
Even though the law is clear. So the question is, if I am a student with a service dog, is it just the mere fact that I'm showing up and have it like a wheelchair or a walker? Because then it's really not asking for the school to do anything. It's just letting me in, just like if I had a walker or a wheelchair. But if I need an accommodation, I need extra time to take my dog to potty. I need to take it home in between band practice and whatever. It may need to be part of my IEP. And each school handles it differently. On transportation, there are some things that we've done some advocacy work around the bus transportation. So especially we're seeing young children having service dogs. If the student is not able to have the animal under their control, then they're going to need someone with them to do that. That's not the school's responsibility.
At what age can one acquire a service dog? Because I'm thinking, how young can they be? Yeah.
The law does not speak to that. So what we're seeing as a trend, and we typically have dealt with adults, but I will tell you, we took on someone who was a child that was nonverbal, physically not able to walk, and the parents got dogs thinking that they wanted a service dog, and they were in over their heads. So we said, we don't think this will ever be a case where this child will have a service dog, and we'll just kind of help you manage the behaviors of these young puppies. I will tell you, the child who was nonverbal, head banging, non-ambulatory, mm-hmm. is able to issue commands to a dog. Mm. And so to interrupt the head banging, he says squish, and the dog puts his body in between the legs of the child and the head.
Oh, really?
So our perceptions of what is possible, I've learned not to say where the line is. Mm-hmm. We see young children with autism getting dogs from programs. I think it's for specialized. We see a lot of parents trying to train dogs for children. Again, it goes back to the capacity of the handler or their support person that's going to be handling the dog, and the job for the dog. So it's really individualized. But there are programs out there that are doing dogs for children.
Well, that just kind of leads me to my next question in these last few minutes. Time has flown. But can you talk about the new roles that service dogs are being trained for today? I mean, like, for example, I know diabetics, they can alert a diabetic and seizure detection. They've been trained to smell for cancer. But can you talk about just briefly some of the new roles that we see service dogs trained for?
Sure. I'm going to talk about PTSD, which is post-traumatic mm-hmm. stress disorder. It is not uncommon for veterans, we see a lot of this, to have a command called clear the room. So the dog is trained to go into an empty room or a room that's occupied, and based on the instructions given in advance of the dog training, to either come back and tell the handler it's safe to come in, or lead them to a seat, mm-hmm. or to turn lights on. So again, it's getting back to what is the need of the person and how is that used. For a migraine alert dog, there are several in our community that have been scent trained. And so just like the diabetic dog, they use cotton swabs to begin to get the scent of when I have a migraine, when I don't. And so we've seen dogs that are detecting migraines a week before the onset of a really bad flare-up so that people can take medication.
Wow. I think that answers my next question, because I was going to say, how is science, you know, helping us to better understand what service dogs can do? And as you talk, it seems like they have they're limitless. I mean, they can do just about anything. They can serve almost any need that may be identified. I mean, I know, you know, we can't do everything, but it just seems like they're expanding their need.
I am continually amazed at the love and talent of service dogs, and their ability to just learn. It takes patience and time, mm-hmm. but you can teach just about anything to a dog.
Yeah. Of course, I'm a dog lover, so, you know, I think they can do anything anyway. So, but that's great. That's great to hear. In listening to this program, how can people support service dog organizations? You know, they hear this information, and I would think, I know hearing it makes you go, ooh, what can I do? That just sounds like a fantastic organization. How can I support them?
So for Service Dog Alliance, we really want to, no matter what your belief, we want you to understand that service dogs are medical equipment, and we want you to help advocate for people in the community to have access.
Okay.
There are programs out there that are training service dogs. They're mm-hmm. always looking for puppy raisers. Mm-hmm. You're not raising a pet, you're raising a future champion mm-hmm. of people with disabilities. Because the answer is not always money. It's really about giving your time and support to organizations who are changing lives.
Okay. Last question. Why is it so important to have a month dedicated to honoring service dogs? And you got to make it quick, 30 seconds.
Service dogs change lives. They're the difference between being able to participate in community life and not.
Okay, it is time out. You have been listening to a conversation with Laura Lee Hutzbeck, Service Dog Alliance of Florida. Service dogs are more than companions, they are lifelines providing independence, safety, and confidence to people with disabilities. Thank you for sharing your insights, Laura Lee, and much appreciation to my listeners for the privilege of your time and ear. Tune in next week, same time, same place, to get the 411 on 411 Team. 411 Team was produced by Dr. Liz Hollifield. Technical assistance was provided by Evan Rossi. You can listen to previous episodes of 411 Team at WFSU.org.